were doing. I was an analyst.
Always famous.
Oh, an analyst.
Oops.
Yeah. What happens if you flip this switch?
You're live.
Yesterday we talked about the one thing that Talmud says that Solomon didn't comprehend, even though he was the wisest man of all the world, and it was the red heifer, the ceremony of the red heifer. There are The scriptures are full of statements like, come out of her, my people, touch not the unclean thing. And, you know, many others like it. And they talk both about the water and the blood. And cell phones. In the New Testament about that. And so we have a mass confusion in our mind between the difference between between what sin is, or trespass, and what being unclean is. We are cleansed from sin by the blood. We receive forgiveness of sin by the blood. But that has nothing to do with what's called cleanliness. For cleanliness, it had to be the waters. And the waters were very specific. And you were unclean if you were in the same house that a leper was, or that if you walked across, a bone where an animal had died.
It's like a human.
It had to be human. It didn't have to be human. And so we were unclean by touching the dead, or something that had to do with the dead. And the waters were all...
I tried.
The waters had to, when the scriptures talk about being clean or unclean, or in the waters versus the blood, it's always connected with either these conditions of leprosy or touching a dead body or things of that nature. Now, here we have Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the one who cleansed us from all unrighteousness and all sin. And on many different occasions, according to the law, he was unclean, which is hard to comprehend. And because he was unclean, then anyone who came in contact or in the same room or house with him, he was unclean. Christ was legally unclean before he was circumcised. He was legally unclean in Samaria. He was legally unclean when he touched the leper. He was legally unclean when he raised the widow's son from the dead. He was legally unclean when he healed the woman with an issue of blood. He was legally unclean when he raised Jairus' daughter from the dead. He was legally unclean when he raised Lazarus from the dead, and he was legally unclean when he himself was raised from the dead. And anyone that was in the room with him was legally unclean. And we can't even comprehend that. And so we, in our minds, there's all kinds of things that happen that cause us to have a feeling of something being wrong, or something that's you know, this sense of not being right or something. And you know, normally it's, you know, if you're a televangelist and you give all kinds of money and you're not healed, it's because you have secret sin in your life. But that's not what this is about, this whole thing of uncleanliness. And it's the least understood concept in the modern church. I remember when I first realized this many years ago that this was back in 81 when I understood this thing about Christ being unclean. Here he was, he appeared to the disciples in this room, and he apparently walked through a wall. But according to the law, everybody in that room was unclean because they were in the same room with a dead body, even though he had been risen from the dead. That's why he told the disciples 10 days before Pentecost the ascension ceremony. That's why he told them they had to go to Jerusalem 10 days in advance, so they could receive the waters of purification, which included this mystery thing of the ashes of the red heifer. Now, this hurt my brain. How could the Son of God, in his resurrected state, how could he, after he healed Lazarus from the dead, how could he be Levitically, or ritually, according to the law, unclean? And so it forced me to try to comprehend the difference between what the blood does and what the water does. And it's two totally different things. Now, by one offering, we have been perfected forever, if you believe Hebrews 10. And so that one offering had to include all of these issues. By his offering, we had to have been made clean some way. But when we try to understand this perfection by only the blood, then we will miss. We won't be apprehended by what the cleanliness means from the water. Do you understand the issue here? I haven't done it too well, but
are you saying that Christ's death, we were perfected both in becoming clean as well as being forgiven?
Yes.
So why then, when he came back to the disciples, did they have to go and?
Because they still were under the law. They had to be until Pentecost. The whole, they had to go through that ceremonial.
We're reading in Acts in our Bible study, and we read last night about when Paul came back to Jerusalem after being out amongst all the Gentiles. As contentious and tough to deal with as he was, he agreed to be cleansed along with the Nazarites that were ending their vow.
That's because he had taken the Nazarite vow.
Right. And he had been with all kinds of people in all kinds of situations. So he submitted to it. What is dirty?
What?
What is dirty? You have to be, clean, dirty.
Well, those aren't two. It's like, in our mind, we think the difference between the opposite of clean is dirty. Yeah. Or the opposite of love is hate. That's not true in the scriptures. You're Levitically unclean because you touched a dead body. Now, and if you can understand this, this is why Jesus said that we must take no thought. We must abandon ourselves. Because every time we come back to ourselves, if the scriptures are right, that by one offering, that if one died for all and we're all dead, and we're not trying to die to self, we are dead. then every time we go inward, every time we have a thing that we're struggling with, then we are Levitically unclean. And we don't have to do anything except that we have to see what his offering did.
Yeah, that makes the circle for me, because when you hear it, you always think, it's out here, it's out here, it's out here. And then when you realize that you are the dead thing, that when you touch it, you become unclean.
Interestingly, the thinking that it's out there, out there, out there is the evidence that you're unclean.
Yeah, always looking for someplace else to put it.
And it's the same with issues of life, that if you blame something, number one, if you're a victim of something, then whether it's, you know, a family or a death or a will or anything, if you're a victim of that will or that situation, then by definition, you've touched the dead body. You've touched yourself because you've become a victim.
It seems like part of this has to do with just by the nature of being in the world, of touching the world, you're unclean.
Well, it's not.
If you give breath to the things of the world, then you can't eat from two tables. You can't be in two camps. It's like if you touch or worship or whatever things that are in the world, then you're out of the temple. You're out of the New Jerusalem. You have to be cleansed to get back in. Even though we're in the world, but we're not of it.
Right. So the point of it is, we are so far out of it that we don't even know that we're out. And so we convince ourselves by mental gymnastics and by how-tos and self-helps that we can make this leap. And so we can have this illusion that even though our heart is condemning us, that we have a system of thought and a conspiratorial alliance with the rest of it that you're okay. In other words, we deny the mystery of God because we are in agreement with the world system. But let's go to 1 Corinthians 10 a minute. I want to show you something.
It's like you worship at the temple in Samaria.
He's just gotten, the whole of Corinthians is talking about that the water which they had in the wilderness was Christ, and the stone that followed them in the wilderness was Christ, and everything was Christ. And it talks about that all the things that happened in the Old Testament happened to them for our benefit, that we might see. You understand that says all that. And it says, well, just to summarize, in verse 7, it's neither be idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happen unto them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. Now you think you stand, you got to hear what standing means. You think you stand. Doesn't matter whether you think you're right or wrong or good or bad, you are standing because you're the subject of your sentence. You're even standing when you're saying, oh, I'm something. This is my problem with...
Yeah, you're standing when you say, oh, I'm standing.
Or when you say, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous, or, and I have nothing against them. I'm just saying that my if I stand up and say my name is Ole and I'm an alcoholic or I'm a drug addict, then I am standing.
You would be an Antichrist Anonymous, right?
I had this exact experience yesterday at a point where I realized, I think I'm standing. I think there was another pride cometh before a fall or something about the thing. And I thought because I said and saw that, that okay, now I'm okay because I'm not standing. But this takes it.
No, because once the I motive is a subject of the sentence, then you're, by spiritual definition, then you're standing.
I heard an amazing thing last night. 1% of AIDS tests are false positives. And the people that are false positives, it takes frequently 10, maybe 15 years to find out that they don't have AIDS and they're not going to die. And the reaction is normally not one of joy or even anger, it's depression. And the depression is because that has become where they stand. That's become their identity. I'm an AIDS patient.
This, believe me, this sounds complicated, but it is so simple. It's not anything complicated. Anyway. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed, lest he fall. There is no temptation or affliction or test taken you, but as such is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tested above that you are able, but with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it. And because of this, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. Now, again, the idolatry is the biggie here. I mean, this is what causes all this other stuff. I speak as to wise men. Judge what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold Israel after the flesh. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols in it is anything? But this I say, that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice or give breath to, they sacrifice to devils or demons, and not to God. And I would not that you should have fellowship with devils. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and the table of devils. Now, it's this thing that the fish can't describe an ocean. We are so accustomed, and more than accustomed, we are so deadened that we don't even know when we do this. And that's why these scriptures that we've talked about, you know, that which is highly esteemed among men is an abomination unto God. If I yet pleased men, I should not be the servant of Christ. And so this whole thing about what does it mean here? What eating is always, throughout the scriptures, throughout life, throughout everything, eating is what you eat is what gives you sustenance and satisfaction. But by the same token, if you don't get the thing that that has been giving you sustenance and satisfaction, then you are starving. You are upset. Something is wrong. Do you understand that as a common? I mean, if what you're eating is movies or soap operas or anything, then and that's where you get your sustenance and your satisfaction and your enjoyment. Then when you don't eat it, then something else happens. You feel a lack, and the same thing is true with these religious conferences or crusades. You know, right now in today's time, there are probably more crusades per day or per week than any other time in history. And people get their sustenance and satisfaction out of that environment. The idea that there's great music and there's the lighting and the feeling that comes from attending one of these crusades becomes what you eat. And as you know, Mark Cavill, when they did this study, that they found out that these people, in his parlance, were crusade junkies, because if they didn't go to the next one, then they felt depressed and the same thing that you would feel if you were any kind of other addict. It affects you. Now, whatever it is, what gives you sustenance and satisfaction, even if it's your work, even if it's doing your religious work, then you're not eating the flesh of the Son. You're still eating at the table of demons. Do you understand that? And if what gives you worth and identity is you know, it's like if it's challenged and you crumble, then that you've identified that your worth is not from the blood of Christ, and your sustenance doesn't come from the body of Christ. Your worth or comes from one of these other things. It may even be Bible study. It may be Trinity. It may be anything. It may be the investigations. It may be the Wittenberg door. It may be anything. But you have to see that we are always addicted to something other than Him for both our sustenance and satisfaction and our worth until we run the rabbit, till it comes to the end. And then we find out, I don't want to eat that anymore. And the only reason I'm talking about this with relation to the red heifer is because this has to be the predicate, otherwise we won't understand the red heifer. Does anybody not understand what I'm saying? Can you see how many things you have to eat before you can eat the body of Christ? You have to eat everything else. You have to be fed up with everything. That's why it's called the afkelman, the after meal. Because it's after you've been fed up with everything else, then it's no trick. It's no more than you got rid of sugar or something, and you don't like sugar anymore. Let's go one other place. Let's go to Isaiah 28.
It's like you can't stand on this side and say, "Well, I'm going to skip over all of that and go right to the red heifer. I'm not going to go through."
You'll act like you.
Yeah, you're a whitewashed sepulcher.
Yeah. The whole of Isaiah 28 is about this crown of pride, which is really identity, which is really self and worth, what you do. And it talks about this incredible thing about that everyone is erring through strong drink, and through strong drink they're out of the way. The priest and the prophet have erred through strong drink. They are swallowed up of wine. They are out of the way through strong drink. They err in vision. They stumble in judgment. And again, that's because no matter what they do, they can call it God, but they're drinking the wine of Ephraim, which is the wine of self-seeking. And they're drunk with that wine. You all seen it, right? But then, now watch what he says in verse 8. For all tables are full of vomit and filthiness, so that there is no place clean. All places that we eat. Now, and it's not just, it's all the places that you've gotten your sustenance and satisfaction from for your whole life. That you already know they're vomit because they've failed you. You've already you've already consumed it and digested it, but you continue to do it because you think, well, it's what I do.
Yeah, what else is there to do? It's right there on the table. It's free. But you don't think about it. It's
fine. For all tables are full of vomit and filthiness, so there's no place clean. Whom shall he teach knowledge? And whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. For precept must be upon precept. Precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. And that's what we've done our whole life. We've tried by linear thinking. We've tried to understand the Bible by taking it line upon line. We've tried to understand life. We've tried to fix marriages, fix relationships, all of it. Whatever it is, we've tried to do it line upon line, line upon line, line upon line. Here a little, there a little. But then God, he says this incredible thing in verse 11. For with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people. And remember, that says mocking. He's mocking us because none of it gives us peace. We always are continually alone. So therefore, we know that, but we continue to eat it, so then all tables are full of vomit. And to whom he said, this is the rest. This mystery of Christ, it's the rest. It's not going to give you rest. He is rest. This is the rest wherewith you may cause the weary to rest. And this is the refreshing. Yet they were not here. But the word of the Lord was unto them, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. It has to come to the place where doing all this line upon line stuff isn't, you're not going to learn anything. Its purpose is that you would go forward and be broken and fall backward and snared and taken. Taken by what? Taken by the fact of your helplessness, your death, your idiocy, and his life. That you're no longer the subject of your sentence. It's not what you do or don't do, it's but what he is. Now, I thought I was going to talk about the red heifer. What happened?
It's a precursor.
And if you don't, it doesn't. I don't care whether you believe this or not. It's not my business, but my business is to try to make it to you, as clear to you. But it's because it's so easy to be deceived. You think you're hearing something. Oh, for the first time I heard. Well, the test whether you heard or not is whether you live it. Not whether you say you heard. That's why, it was so important for us to think about this. Evangelists or preachers in the first century, they lived with the people. They didn't go there on an hour of Sunday. Even the evangelists, they stayed 2 and 3 years, so the words were tested by their life. Not feeding him, religious vomit.
With the more advanced groups, they could just move on after about 4 or 5 years. With this stunted groups, just hang around for 30 years.
Anybody have any response? Again, it's the religion of your, what you do outwardly doesn't matter. It's a religion that's going on internally in you as the temple. All this outward crap doesn't mean anything. That's not what God looks at.
I remember the most important part of this cleansing thing, when you were talking about it, was the fact that everybody was always doing something that made them unclean. And it was just sort of like a normal part of, you know, the process of what you were doing to get cleansed from that. And so, you know, it wasn't like I feel real
no,
bad
because
I happened to do this. It's just, this is what I need to do. And it was
natural as breathing. That's why there were 144,000 priests in the temple at the time of Christ, because these priests were all over the country. And the ashes of the red heifer could only be administered in the temple, but the waters of purification for leprosy and for, you know, other cleansing activities are all over the place. And so, but it wasn't just on the three great pilgrimage feasts that people came to Jerusalem. They had to come to Jerusalem for these cleansing ceremonies, especially the ones that concerned the ashes of the red heifer. And the reason I started out with the times when Jesus was Levitically unclean and needed the waters of purification to fulfill the law was that sort of hurts your brain. And maybe it'll cause a crack in the armor of what you define as whether you're unclean or not. I mean, that's why... What now is when he said, out of your belly shall flow rivers of living water, that wasn't, oh, that's going to make people come alive. These were the cleansing waters that, by, you know, now you are clean by the word that he has spoken. But the living water had to come during the type or during the parable from the pool of Siloam. And that pool was... That was like 1 micron from hell. That was 1 micron from Gehenna. It was right next to Gehenna. And yet that's where the living waters were. And they had to then be mixed with enough of the ashes of the red heifer that you could at least see a little bit of the ash. And then they had to be administered by a child that had never done anything except live in a cave. I mean, there's a whole lot of, there's tapes up the gazoo on the ashes of the red heifer down that are go into this in huge detail. And Harry saying for a donation of $50 to Harry.
Get the complete package.
But really this, the problem... I think I'm going to leave it at that about the ashes of the red heifer, because you can't go into the detail. When we did when we studied this back in 86 or 5, I mean, we spent weeks on these things.
I was interested in how you were going
to... No, it's it can't be that.
The ashes of the red heifer in a nutshell. Yeah, for them.
But before we, I mean, before any of that makes any sense, who could believe that in our culture that taking a stand, which is the enemy of everything spiritual, is because that's all we do. I'll tell you about that. I want to take a stand about getting rid of labels. I'm going to stay, but it's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous as any other stand.
We could rearrange the room so you're over there looking this way.
No, I'd see something else. Anyhow, if again, Harry has tons of tapes on this. If you want any details, take a big guy.